most of you can remember from your basic physics, that what appears to be solid got more space than solid matter as it's in constant motion. Earth is like a gigantic spinning ball of the electric fluid or ether of space. His observation would imply that an electromagnetic thump on one part of that ball of electric fluid would send splash rings spiraling around the planet only to meet at the antipode of the initial thump. They go around the globe, bang. You don't be an electrician to understand that. They're quite contrary to one's first thoughts at this place. These splash rings would not simply reflect from meeting themselves at the antipodes simply to eventually return to the source point. Not so. For they would indeed meet at the antipodes, but the vector sums of their meetings would not be head-on, as the density of the transmitting medium is not compressible. Instead of colliding, the wave fronts would actually produce a return wave front, which would then spiral back to the source like a spinning smoke ring or toroid of energy. This redirected wave front would only partially interact with the next oncoming wave from the source. This would be due to the fact that both wave fronts would be separated by an angle somewhere between 90 and 180 degrees, depending upon the relative motion of the planet's conductive surface in contrast to the planet's spinning magnetic field. That angle between the send and return waves from the antipode could also be controlled at the source by enhancing or retarding the wave pulse's spin moment. That means somebody controlling these transmitters could spin these things off like a pipe smoker can blow a smoke ring. Having the power with those electrical generators to affect human behavior. If one were to then observe the path of energy pulses, one would perceive, you don't think God knew what he's talking about when he said, he has to shorten the time at the end. If one were then to observe the path of energy pulses, one would perceive an immense global grid system which would be broadcasting power around the entire world. The grid illusion would be caused by the energy density spirals from the initial wave being overlapped by the energy density spirals of the return wave. Two such transceivers could explain the twin grid networks which Captain Bruce Cathy discussed in his book, Harmonic 695. I haven't read it, but I will. If such is the case, however, Captain Cathy's grid cell sizes appear to be in error, but only by a few miles. Because if the broadcast frequency were 14,327 hertz, then the cell size would be a diamond-shaped 13 miles by 13 miles at an altitude of 158 miles by 12.5 miles by 12.5 miles at sea level. All you need to know at this point is that they can be controlled, and even this guy can figure it out. Waves going and coming. Having the capacities to affect not only inanimate things, but organisms, to tap the energy. You say, what does it got to do with weather? Just wait. To tap the energy of such a broadcast. You see, a few years ago, the United States didn't have four of these working with their antipodes. A few years ago, Russia, well, more than a few years ago, but in terms of human and historic perspective, only recently did Russia have the one at Riga. And these waves are going. To tap the energy of such a broadcast requires the construction of a tunable Tesla coil, which either operates at 14.3 kilohertz, or some even super harmonic of it. Of course, the higher the harmonic the coil is tuned to, the lower will be the power received in an inverse proportion to the increased frequency. I don't expect anybody to be able to write a term paper on this when I finish. I just want you to have a gestalt that some scientists who know these principles can have some powerful effects on this old Earth's atmosphere as a conductor and the Earth itself. The Tesla coil's primary would be the high voltage inner coil in this instance, as the voltage will need to be stepped down. The total length of the wire, I don't need to give you all that stuff. Depending on the field density, which could produce problems. Blah, 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 blah. He goes into all kinds of technical descriptions of how to make this work. He says, for now, this phase of the reader's education must wait until later in this book. He is only pointing out that Tesla created something that modern scientists, both Russian and the United States, are using that can make this whole Earth itself become a conductor and can send these waves around the globe. Then he says, the genius who won the Nobel Prize in 1912, Tesla, patented over 900 new processes in the field of energy conversion, received 14 doctorates from universities all over the world, resonated the entire Earth in 1899 with over 100 million volts, broadcast electricity over 25 miles without wires to light 10,000 watts of filament globes, devised the system of alternating current power generation and transmission which lights the world today, designed a force field to shield America from air attack in World War II, suggested a process for charged particle death ray, which is now a reality, discussed electrical weather control in practical terms in 1905, and devised a procedure which would turn the upper ionosphere into a single fluorescent light source to permanently light the Earth. That rare genius of a man, Dr. Nikola Tesla, who had crammed several lifetimes of research into one, was finally to expire a lonely and apparently forgotten figure on the 7th of January in 1943. Was he really forgotten? Or was his work so advanced that it has required two generations of secrecy to safely administer his findings? What happened to his papers? Now we get to weather. This chapter is entitled Affecting Weather Warfare. Am I boring you? Many of... Don't you want to know what's causing this crazy weather? If I were you driving out there, I'd pull off the stop and get ready to swear. Don't swear at the traffic. Many of Dr. Tesla's incredible contributions to the world of physics yet remain to be revealed to the public for, quote, too loud, security reasons, end quote. How are we doing, Joe? You off the phone yet? Don't impugn yourself. If he had only known, Tesla that is, what horrible misuse would be applied to some of his most promising ideas, turn me down a little, one wonders if he would have even voiced them. It is certain that some of his ideas are being used by Russia and the United States alike in producing controlled weather phenomena as instruments of war. In 1976, during the month of October, a new kind of radio radar jamming signal manifested. Well, we read about that. The signal was triangulated to Riga, Russia's very low frequency station. The signal was properly blamed on the Russians, who apologized profusely for a few low frequency tests. Those low frequencies were in the range of 143 hertz. Sound familiar? About this same time, according to a report filed in June of 1978 by Edward Campbell of the London Evening News, quote, the Russians had a nationwide hunt going on for anybody from Yugoslavia worldwide who had ever known or met Tesla. According to the same source, early in 1977, meteorologists reported an extraordinary blocking effect extending down the west coast of America, and a similar blocking, invisible iron curtain on the east coast and along the Russo-Polish border up to Finland. These blocks stopped the normal circulation of the weather. Scientific brows wrinkled in alarm when it was discovered that each of these doorstops on world weather, turn me down a hair, seemed to be associated, listen close, you don't have to remember the details, but I think everybody caught, he proved there were standing waves encircling the globe. Scientific brows wrinkled in alarm when it was discovered that each of these doorstops on world weather seemed to be associated with very large standing waves of electromagnetic energy. Meanwhile, world weather went haywire. Snow fell in Miami. It wasn't Florida I got to blame for this cold. It just makes me mad. Damn that cold. Snow fell in Miami, flood swept Europe. And the American nuclear submarine monitoring system went on the blink after two of the American observation satellites were destroyed by, quote, electron beam technology. In December of 1974, Howard Benedict of the Associated Press in Washington filed an earlier report on the subject of weather warfare entitled The Weather as a Secret Weapon. Benedict's article said that although both the U.S. and Russian official spokesmen had denied such weather weapons existed at that moment, sounds familiar, doesn't it? Research was, quote, underway. What else could they have said? Quote, we've got super weather weapons now. What if they'd have said that? I didn't add anything there. I quoted the whole way. Read it again. Benedict's article said that although both the U.S. and Russian official spokesmen had denied such weather weapons existed at that moment, research was, quote, underway. What else could they have said? We got the super weather weapons now? They're going to tell the world they got them? One could imagine the result. Even the smallest weather anomaly would have raised cries of war. It's war. I mean, it's snowing, isn't it, up on Mulholland Drive right now. And if the government had said that, we do have weather warfare, somebody would be screaming, it's war. You don't wait for bombs to drop, you wait for snow to fall in the wrong place. They're not going to tell you whether they have them or not. The official position is one of, quote, preemptive weapons production over the Russians' probable development of the same weapon. One wonders what sort of weapons they were discussing. Benedict's article states, quote, current Pentagon research at the cost of $1.52 million annually is limited to rainmaking, rain suppression, and hail and fog dispersal. In short, confessing to some weather research, they say their budget is limited to rainmaking, rain suppression, and hail and fog dispersal. I'd say from Southern California's viewpoint, they're eminently successful in the first part an absolute failure on the second part. They got the making part, the suppression part. They blew it. Last October, the Soviet Union introduced a resolution in the United States. Do you think they ever do anything like this just because they like to hear their voice? Last October was a few years back. This was written when? 1980. February 1980, so that'd be 79. Last October, the Soviet Union introduced a resolution in the United Nations asking the Geneva Disarmament Conference to outlaw weather research for military purposes. Why? The Soviet ambassador, Mr. Jacob Malik, said scientists had concluded that a future weather weapons arsenal might even include the ability to create acoustic fields on the sea and ocean surface to combat individual ships or whole flotillas. His article went on to say that by cloud seeding areas 1,000 miles upwind from a particular country, one could cause severe droughts for years afterward to the target country. Do you know the greatest drought in the world has been going on? Do you see the news of people being driven out of a country? You know, you sit off in Riga and decide who cares if half of Africa starves to death? We won't try it on the United States first. How incredible. One can imagine the comments after such a disaster. Gee, the weather's sure been bad lately. What a pity. The report of the ambassador mentioned the possible alteration of the ozone layer found at about 25 to 30 miles altitude. Alteration by chemical and physical means to allow excessive ultraviolet radiation to bombard certain areas of the planet. Perhaps one of the most interesting possibilities that his article mentioned was suggested by Dr. Gordon MacDonald of Dartmouth College, an internationally known geophysicist and astrophysicist. Quote, "The release of thermal energy in the Arctic or Antarctic, perhaps through nuclear explosions along the base of an ice sheet, could initiate outward sliding of the ice sheet. The immediate effect would be to create massive tidal waves that would completely wreck coastal regions." He outlined a concept, Dr. MacDonald of Dartmouth, in which enhanced electrical oscillations in the Earth's atmosphere might be used to impair human brains. He said, "Research indicates that weak oscillating electrical fields can influence the brain, causing small but measurable reduction in a person's performance. Lightning research has shown that it might be possible to control lightning to create such low-frequency oscillations in the ionosphere." Several points must leap out of the page to even a first-time reader. One, the use of very low-frequency, high-voltage fields in the ionosphere. Two, the heating of a polar cap. Three, selective lightning production. Now, the first point, high-voltage fields in the ionosphere with very low frequency, has been previously discussed in the previous chapter. Second point is not so obvious. Let's expand it. When a very low frequency field like Tesla's is tuned to a frequency that creates a complete cycle at the antipode to the sending tower, out and back, the thermodynamics of the energy exchange are uniform at both poles. However, when a frequency is used which completes a full cycle at the sending pole, it causes excessive cooling at the sending tower and excessive heating at the antipodes. So I can figure that out. Just find the opposite pole from the ice packs and shoot it up there, and they're going to warm up. Isn't that what you're saying, engineers, or not? I can figure that out. I'm not even an engineer. Could this be used to melt a polar ice cap, thus flooding either Russia or the Canadian coastlines? Is this why both America and Russia have established VLF stations at the South Pole? Indian standoff. One has to wonder. Oh, we're just all out here going to the poles. Government by the people, of the people, for the people. With the world being run by people that go to football parades in the rain, having this much power. Third point is linked to the first one. However, a byproduct of the production of those very low frequency, high voltage resonating fields is that one can direct lightning strikes to specific targets on the other side of the earth. What is the exact antipode of the FCC's offices? Will somebody tell me right now? Boy, lightning. Wouldn't that be fun? See, what's this got to do with the Bible? You know, I've always puzzled about the false prophet. The false prophet during the tribulation who makes the world bow down to Antichrist, who has the power to call down fire from heaven. I just never have liked to give that credit to the devil. But here you have it. A power figure. Can you imagine what masses in Africa and South America would do with a spiritual figure that could direct a lightning bolt? A byproduct of the production of those VLF high voltage resonating fields is that one can direct lightning strikes to specific targets on the other side of the earth. Hold on just a cotton picking minute. Let's just see if that thing says what I think it says in the Bible. You bored?
No, sir.
I mean, you know, I can dangle you. It makes it more interesting. Let's just pursue this for a minute. Book of Revelation. Thirteenth chapter. The false prophet. I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. He doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. I'm not saying this is the way he'll do it, but I can tell you right now, given the right circumstance, don't even need God's help. He can do it this way. If such technology is as advanced as all the evidence indicates, then the United States and Russia would be in an intense power struggle for control of those adjacently or diametrically situated areas of the planet which could be used as VLF broadcasting tower locations to affect weather warfare. Now let's just take a look. Get your globe out at the following situations. America has known VLF stations. We don't know how many that they have. We don't know. America has known VLF stations located at the South Pole near McMurdo Sound. South Africa in Transvaal and in central and northwestern Australia. Three of them are nuclear powered. The antipodes of them are respectively in the regions of the central Barents Sea above the Swedish-Finnish border and Riga, so we can hit it, on the Tropic of Cancer, midway between Hawaii and Cabo San Lucas, and in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, and on the Tropic of Cancer over the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. If America has other VLF weapons strategically deployed against Russia, they would be in areas like the South Sandwich Islands, Cape Horn, the Southeast Tasmanian Cape, the South Tasman Range, and the southern portion of New Zealand's South Island. Russia has a known VLF station at Riga and a suspected one at the South Pole location of Vostok. The antipodes of these are respectively in the South Pacific Sea near the ice packs at the southern tip of the Albatross Cordillera and the Baffin Bay Basin ice packs, aimed exactly where they can meld them. Either location could produce coastal flooding or tidal wave phenomena under certain conditions. The clairvoyant Edgar Cayce, who was right on in predicting that in the area near Bermuda and in that Bermuda Triangle area they would find remnants of Atlantis undersea, they now find it off the coast of Spain, so Atlantis evidentiary data has been collected from Bermuda to Spain, but Cayce, who saw it years ago, also predicted. And let me tell you, his percentage was way beyond this gal in Washington, D.C. that the National Enquirer promotes. Edgar Cayce once predicted that the Great Lakes would become a part of the Atlantic Sea and the Hudson Bay at some future date. It would only happen if these ice packs melted. If the U.S. wants to protect itself from a direct VLF attack over America proper, it must surely be defending the sub-oceanic locality around the Mid-Indian Ridge, bounded by 23 south to 55 south by 55 east to 120 east in the southern Indian Ocean. Conversely, the Russians' recent occupation of the Bellingshausen Sea region at the South Pole between the Weddell Sea and the tip of Birdland must indicate a likewise defensive posture for potential VLF warfare. It cannot fail to impress one that the draft treaty presented to the August 1975 Geneva Conference on International Disarmament by delegates from both the USA and the USSR contained the ban of 19 man-made weather catastrophes. Specifically, they included the triggering of avalanches and landslides, awakening volcanoes, causing earthquakes and tidal waves. Do you understand what I'm saying? In 1975, the draft treaty prohibited these two nations from using man-made weather catastrophes. Specifically, they included. Now, we're worrying about being able to police disarmament. Specifically, the treaty banned man-made triggering of avalanches and landslides, awakening volcanoes, causing earthquakes and tidal waves, harnessing lightning bolts, guiding hurricanes or cyclones to strategic targets, melting ice caps to flood nearby coastal states, changing directions of rivers, generating fog, hail, and rain, and deliberately destroying portions of the Earth's ozone shield. What is the real purpose of President Carter's, quote, Operation Noah's Ark? Why pick Noah's Ark? It reminds one of a flood. Well, I'll tell you why. Well, let's stop for a minute. Let's stop for just a minute. Do you realize I've gone almost 2 hours and I'm not even to the pyramid yet? Huh? I'll give you something here just for a second. I'll read you something. Let's skip over here a bit. Between the years 1897 and 1946, the average number... That's a long time, you know. You know the Bible says something about earthquakes in the last days? The average number of observed earthquakes over the Richter scale of 6 was 3 every 10 years worldwide. Between 1946 and 1956, for the 50 years preceding, it was 3 every 10 years. Between 1946 and 1956, the average jumped to 7 in that 10-year period. That isn't much. Jumped from 3 to 7, just doubled. In the following decade, from 56 to 66, 17 over Richter 6 occurred. Then in 1967, the yearly one-year earthquake figure for earthquakes over Richter 6 was more than 17. In 1968, 19 over Richter 6 occurred. In 1969, 21. In 1970, 24. In 1971, 34. 50 years, 3 per 10 years. In 1971, 34 separate earthquakes. Now remember, the earth is fluid. All these waves going, experimentations, the crust of the earth is not that stable. Something's happening. 71, 34 earthquakes over 6. How big was the one that shook up Valley over here a few years ago? Anybody remember? Huh? During the decade of 1967 to 76, 10-year period, there were 180 earthquakes over Richter 7 on the scale. Why did Carter call his... What was the purpose of Operation Noah's Ark? Is a mini ice age on the way? Are you out there? Hey... How are we doing, Joe?
Fabulous.
Now, what have I got to say about all this? God's in control. God's in control. After they get done experimenting, one of these days they're going to blow them all up. After we're properly situated. I still got to find out about Noah's Ark, don't I? Interesting stuff yet ahead, you know. According to an article written by Gary Hughes in February of 78, reprinted in the Australian Sunday Times newspaper, the world is facing a mini ice age. The article entitled Mini Ice Age on the Way stated, "The freezing weather which brought southwest England to a crunching halt this week and buried the countryside under mountainous snowdrifts is here to stay. For experts say it is part of the same weather pattern that paralyzed Scotland and New York in January, caused freak heat waves in Australia and other southern hemisphere countries." How many winters have we been going through now where they thought this is the worst? Hughes quoted the well-known astrophysicist Dr. John Gribben. According to Dr. Gribben, the cause of the cooling in the northern hemisphere is you better call me. El Segundo, we are so upset. It is a sin, a cardinal sin, to dangle and not complete a thought or subject matter. You're on third base. May a purple polka dot wart grow on your nose if you don't go on home. Or continue, if you continue to dangle like this. Then they soften up the sin, already sent a check in for this month. I will not sit in front of the camera and watch a purple polka dot wart grow on my nose. I'm going to go home. You're to blame. I'm scared. Well, we didn't get to the pyramid tonight, did we? Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, we'll get to either Noah's Ark or the pyramid. Carter's Noah's Ark. See, the next step I got to do in the pyramid is rather complicated. It's about as heavy as this. Got to have your complete attention. Because I've got to introduce you to the real planning room of the pyramid, which is erroneously called the antechamber, where the sacred Enoch circle gives you the relationship between the sacred cubit and the royal cubit, and why the sacred cubit had to come from God, which is the proper unit of measurement, which shows how damnable it is that they're trying to change our American inch and go to some other system. But I've got to lay down the principle of why you must read the chronology of the pyramid on an inch to a year basis, and why that Christ angle, as well as the descending angle to those that do not follow it in those passages of the pyramid, go an inch to a year, but when you shift to a... If you're looking at a map, you have a scale on a map, but then they have inserts that blow up a city, and it's a different scale. You interpret the passages of the pyramid, as long as they stay on the angle of ascension, it's an inch to a year. But the horizontal sideways things blow it up like an insert in a map to a different standard. And I got to introduce you to the origin of the sacred cubit, which said measuring device has as its reference what only God knew originally. The size, diameter of this earth, and the proper measuring device on this earth has the earth's dimensions in view. So it's going to be complicated, too complicated to stay and do it tonight. So I'm going to go home, put some antidote on, a purple wart on my nose that's bound to come out. And I'm not dangling you. I do intend, God willing, to keep right on with this teaching, because the Sunday services need a lot of the stuff that I do during the week to give me the gestalt of background for you, so I can move us on into understanding some of the truths that not only sort out what's happening in the world today without appearing to be super mystical, just because God's Word is clear if you'll do the work to ferret it out, but also show us that God is in control, and thank God we're on His side. Unlike some preachers that think they can give you a formula that will put God on your side, thank God we're on His side. And He is in control, and we're in safe hands. Hallelujah. I can say that in a teaching is far removed to some people from a religious program, so far, much so that thank God we lost most of them that didn't want to listen to this. But will you be watching at 8 o'clock tomorrow night? Because I want to carry on with the pyramid. I got some new books. I mean, you know, it's like when we handle the 10 tribes. I've decided I'm just going to take you through so many different authors, some of whom argue over when it was built, who built it, some of whom argue over when was the exact date in the processions when that Polestar, Draconis. Now, if you go down that passage of the pyramid now, Polaris is out there. But if you go far enough down in the passage, the light won't shine all the way into the pit. But one time, a pinpointed time, it shined all the way to the pit, and the North Star, when that happened, was the Dragon Star, symbol of Satan. Now, depending upon the debates of those times, we've got to correct a lot of calendars, particularly the Gregorian calendar. I'm going to do what I did with the Lost Tribes. When I really get into the pyramid, I'm just going to bring you a mass of stuff until the Gestalt comes. And after the Gestalt has come, then I'm going to sort out what, in my judgment, is the safe path to trod as you make God's witness in stone, confirm what God's Word has said. Never will we go outside God's Word. That's rooted and grounded on the authority of Christ Himself. But God has a witness in the stars, and He has a witness in stone, and they all confirm. They all confirm His Word one with another. They all conform to it. 4,000 years ago, the architect of the pyramid pinpointed when the Exodus would begin. 4,000 years ago, exactly to the day, he pinpointed on an inch to a year scale, and there's no way you can change it. It's embedded in rock. He pinpointed the exact time between the Exodus and the crucifixion of Christ. Remember that old bat well that it went down in? That scary thing? All the people that I've ever read in the scientific realm have said that that tunnel that they dug up from that pit down there was dug as an afterthought so they could go in and check on the pyramid. Well, what in the world are we going to check on? There wasn't any body in it. And to those who think the pyramid's a tomb, what'd they ventilate the thing for? Who wants to smell dead bodies? And dead bodies don't need air to breathe. Air is for life. They ventilated it. That tunnel from the pit bursts forth into the expanded gallery that represents the time of the church, the resurrection of Christ. Perfect type, not type, perfect map of Him conquering death, hell, and the grave and literally bursting out at the time of the resurrection. That stone monument 4,000 years ago pinpointed the exact day of His crucifixion and resurrection in relationship to the number of years since the Exodus out of Egypt, and it pinpointed exactly the end of that great gallery and the beginning of troubles that is the start of the last days. It pinpointed it exactly to a day in 1914 when the World War broke out. These are not accidents. And have you ever wondered why that Daniel, that is written in God's book, and Jesus gave authority to Daniel, that have you ever wondered why Daniel, that's written to write the prophetic picture of the world, spends a whole chapter on Nebuchadnezzar losing his mind and wandering around insane? And that ever puzzled you? As if they wanted to tell a bedtime story or a horror story so it'd stay interesting? And how many of you know that history proves he did not stay mad 7 years? I've even preached that, but I've done the research. I was wrong. History proves he was not insane for 7 years. So the seven times doctrine cannot at all refer to his madness. We can prove in history now from independent sources that there was only a 4-year maximum and maybe a little less gap in his reign. He himself testifies to 4 years that his heart wasn't right outside the Bible. So what were the seven times referring to in the book of Daniel of madness? And the power of a madman to rule. And you pick the date that you got to pick to apply it to a proper interpretation of that seven times from biblical chronology in the Enoch circle of the pyramid, you come to the same point, 1914. Now, I got a lot of things I got to cross before I preach. I may preach on those, on the madness of Nebuchadnezzar Sunday. I may preach on 100 other things. Just depending on what we can get done this week.